Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the show. Glad to be here. I'm your host today. My name is Andrew Green. This is the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about on WSJM News. We have extended conversations with the folks who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. And coming up on today's program, we have multiple guests. First, we'll talk with Congressman Fred Upton about a couple of different things that he's been talking about in Washington lately. We'll also chat with the principal of St. Joseph High School and learn about the OK to Say tip line. This is a tip line that the Michigan Attorney General's office set up for students to report suspicious situations. And, you know, assemblies are held at schools all over the state so the kids can be informed about it. So I caught up with a high school principal locally, Greg Blomgren from St. Joe High, to find out about how that process has worked locally. We'll talk with him about that on the show. And we'll also chat with the Berrien County Health Department on today's program. Learn a little something about proper infant sleep, safe infant sleep. The health department has been spreading the message lately about the importance of parents to know how to safely put their babies to sleep so that they wake up happy and healthy. And if you'd like to weigh in on something we discuss here on the show, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Right now it's time for a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk with Congressman Fred Upton about a couple of different issues. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You are listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the program. A couple of different things to talk about on today's show. First of all, yesterday there was a big doings at the Berrien County Courthouse. I was down there. That's because former Benton Harbor School Superintendent Leonard Seawood was sentenced. He was convicted of stealing $46,000 from the district by getting payouts for vacation time that he hadn't used, but he wasn't supposed to do that. He said that he had the approval of school board members sort of individually to go ahead and do that, but it wasn't ever something that I recall being discussed at a school board meeting, and I met a lot of them. Anyway, the judge yesterday, Judge Donna Howard, sentenced Dr. Seawood for this embezzlement case. He was sentenced to 90 days in jail, plus 5 years probation, and he has to pay $46,000 in restitution. He is going to appeal, and the judge denied a motion made by his attorney that his sentence be stayed pending that appeal. She said, no, that'll take years. And so off he went to jail yesterday for actually 89 days. He got 1 day credit for time served. And Judge Howard was talking yesterday in the courtroom, saying the reason why she thought he should be sent to at least some jail time is simply the damage that was done to morale at Benton Harbor area schools. That's something that school board trustee Martha Momeny talked about prior to the sentencing. She spoke in court and she said Seawood played them for suckers and it was tremendously damaging to the school district's morale at a time when it was already struggling. Judge Howard touched on that at Dr. Seawood's sentencing yesterday.
I take into consideration, as I mentioned, the trust, the public trust that has been lost and caused to the Benton Harbor school system as well as our community in this case.
Dr. Seawood has maintained his innocence. He said, quote, it was never his, he said it was never, quote, his intent to bring any shame or dishonor to the district. He did speak yesterday. So that matter now closed. Now there will be an appeal. But of course, the Seawood investigation, it was something like an 8-month investigation by Michigan State Police after he was suspended by the school board. So that that chapter in Benton Harbor area schools' history is now closed, and that was the excitement yesterday. Also, we've had some interesting announcements as of late regarding businesses here in Michigan's great Southwest. Whirlpool laying off an unspecified number of employees just in the past week or so. If you know people who work at Whirlpool, they'll be able to tell you something. Now, Whirlpool hasn't specified just how many employees were laid off. They say they still have about 4,000 employees here in Benton Harbor, St. Joe, and the reason for these layoffs is Whirlpool is trying to reduce costs by $150 million this year. You know, that happens from time to time with large companies such as Whirlpool, and even it happens from time to time with Whirlpool. So that's one of the bits of bad news we had around here this week. Also, we got word yesterday, courtesy of Moody on the Market, that the Carson's store at the Orchards Mall is closing. Now, that's interesting because just the day before that, I chatted with the Orchards Mall about a program that they're launching to attract more visitors to the mall. What they're doing is they're holding events at the mall now, regular sort of community events that are going to be held every month. They want to have a few of them each month to get more foot traffic in there to enliven the place a little bit. I don't know if you've been to the Orchards Mall lately, but it's not exactly a lively location. A lot of the stores areas are just sort of displays done up to sort of almost look like stores, but they're trying, and they say they're getting some new retailers in there. There's actually a Venezuelan restaurant opening up in the food court, I was told. I talked with Orchards Mall marketing coordinator Ed Moore this week about some of the events they've got planned there. And he told me, you know, they're still holding these special events. They want to attract more people to this mall. It's not a bad location if you go in there. It's in decent shape. And these special engagements are sort of running the gamut.
We have a lot of events coming up. We're working with a circus. We're working with a carnival. We're working with reptile and arachnids, a psychic fair, pet adoption, Mother's Day, Easter. We have craft shows coming up. We have a vintage antique show coming up in March and a free wrestling event.
So they definitely want to get more people down there, especially considering the Carson's location, an anchor store, is now about to be empty. And Moore told me, you know, it's all about the atmosphere.
To bring some life back to the mall, because that's what we want. We have new tenants coming in. We want to showcase the mall because the mall is a great place to be.
So they're trying to get more people to come to the Orchards Mall in the form of all these events they're going to hold. He told me they're working to get a circus in there. So who knows if this will work, but it certainly is bad news that the Carson's is shutting down. That's going to happen sometime within the next 12 weeks, I am told. So that's a bit of bad news this week about the program, about the Orchards Mall, and just local business in general. Now, later on, we may have Ed here on the show to talk more in-depth about some other things they're doing to try and reinvigorate the Orchards Mall. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now, it's time for our first guest, and that is Congressman Fred Upton. I caught up with Fred just ahead of President Trump's State of the Union this week. It was the president's first State of the Union. Fred did not know exactly what the president was going to say. He told me he hoped that the president would talk about infrastructure, and he did. And he also told me he hoped that the president would talk about the need for immigration reform, and he did, although I'm not sure if it was in the way that most folks who wish to be bipartisan wanted to hear it. So I talked with Fred about that. He didn't have a whole lot to say about the State of the Union, but I wanted to ask him about legislation that was recently approved by the U.S. House. This is legislation intended to protect athletes from sexual assault. Obviously, that's relevant given the Larry Nassar debacle over at Michigan State University. The U.S. House has approved legislation to protect athletes from sexual assault. I chatted with Congressman Fred Upton about this. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Fred. So the U.S. House approving legislation designed to protect athletes. Tell us a bit more about what this plan does.
So we passed a bill last night, S-534, passed 406-3. This is going to require that any state, any sporting organization that learns of sexual abuse has got to report that within 24 hours. We saw a terrible case, obviously, at Michigan State. We're all grieving about it. I talked earlier this week with the father of someone who was abused, and he shared with me some of the details. She was actually one that testified last week. It's just heartbreaking. And not only, and I support what Magic Johnson has said, anyone that knew about this needs to go, but we also have to think about the hundreds. I know 150 testified, but there are hundreds more that are likely impacted by this Dr. Nassar that have not been identified, and many of them need help. A couple have committed suicide. Not all of them have been identified, and it's not over. Our committee, Energy and Commerce Committee, is going to be holding hearings. We'll put people under oath, but we're going to be looking at all aspects of this in the weeks ahead.
So when you look at Michigan State with the whole Larry Nasser situation, you think there should be a new board there?
I'm one for saying, and again, I support what Magic Johnson said, anyone that had any knowledge of this in advance, they got to go. Okay. And if that includes the whole board, that's so be it. They need to go. And there can't be any excuse for this.
Okay, so the House passed this on a huge margin this week. And, of course, so what now? It goes back to the Senate?
It does. No. This was actually a Senate bill.
Oh, a Senate bill.
That we passed, so it's going to go directly to the president.
Oh, okay.
So I expect that the president will sign it next week.
There you go. That's Congressman Fred Upton telling us about some legislation. I had a couple of minutes with him earlier this week. This legislation requires, it updates the requirements for individuals who are associated with amateur sports leagues. Organizations like, say, Michigan State University or USA Gymnastics, they have to report instances of sexual assault that they might learn about. Not doing so means they will be held responsible. New requirement that passed the Senate back in the fall. And as Fred noted there, just went to the House. And so now it's going on to the president. He expects the president to sign it. And possibly next week. That's one way that Congress can weigh in on the whole Larry Nasser debacle over at Michigan State University. Speaking of Congressman Upton, he was aboard that train that hit a truck yesterday in Virginia. Fred sent out a tweet yesterday following that incident. One person was killed when a train, an Amtrak train with a bunch of members of Congress on it, they were headed to a resort, to a retreat, that is, with the president, and this train hit a truck that was on the tracks, and Fred yesterday sent out a tweet that read, quote, "The train carrying GOP members to our retreat had a collision. Amy and I are both okay." Amy's his wife. "Docs and security on board are helping secure the scene." So no members of Congress were seriously injured in that incident. So we appreciate Fred's time earlier this week, and we're certainly glad that he was not injured in that train incident. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will chat with the principal of St. Joseph High School. I wanted to ask him, you know, he's a high school principal, so I wanted to find out how the state attorney general's okay to say tip line actually works on the ground level in an actual school such as St. Joe High. We'll find out about that with St. Joe High School principal Greg Blomgren. If you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. I'm the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be here, etc., etc. Right now, I wanted to tell you about what happened at Michigan State University this week. There's been a few things going on at Michigan State University lately, but the Board of Trustees there, they have been under fire because they did not want to fire the president, Luana Simon, over the Larry Nasser scandal. And yesterday, the Board of Trustees finally settled on an interim president for MSU. You may have heard about this. It's former Governor John Engler, who they picked to replace Luana Simon, who resigned last Wednesday, finally over the Larry Nasser situation. Anyway, there was a raucous meeting of the Board of Trustees at MSU yesterday. Students showed up. That's never good. And also, faculty showed up as well. And so the board voted picking former Governor John Engler for this position. Trustee Diane Byram, who's noted in politics, she said that she and Engler, they had disagreements at the state capitol back when they were there together, but she believed it was the right move. The vote was unanimous.
It's time for major changes at Michigan State University. We must change our culture. We must increase transparency and accountability, and we must improve communications. John Engler is well prepared to lead this effort as interim president.
MSU Board of Trustees Chairman Brian Breslin making it official.
John Engler is hereby appointed the interim president of Michigan State University commencing Monday, February 5, 2018, and continuing until such time as the board conducts a national search and appoints a permanent president.
Not everyone happy about this. Faculty representative Dr. Laura McCabe spoke. She said the faculty, well, isn't happy with the appointment. She notes their criteria for an interim leader were not met.
We are sadly forced to bring a motion to hold a vote of no confidence in the Board of Trustees to the academic governance.
And Trustee Joel Ferguson praised the selection of Engler as interim president. Former Governor Jim Blanchard was also picked to be a senior advisor at MSU.
We're blessed that they want to step forward and that they want to help lay the foundation for the next step.
I mentioned students were there. They, of course, raised a ruckus. They took over the meeting in protest. One of them sat on the board's table.
These board of trustees do not speak on behalf of students, staff, or faculty at Michigan State. There's been no student or staff or faculty comment on this vote.
While Engler will be the interim president, the trustees also picked former Governor Jim Blanchard to be the special advisor. Both of them are MSU graduates. The faculty is planning a vote of no confidence in the board of trustees. If it passes, they will ask all eight to resign immediately. That's some of the doings over at Michigan State University this week. Others weighing in on this. State Senator Curtis Hurdle of East Lansing, he's commented, he's concerned about the selection of John Engler.
Now, the president is supposed to implement policy, not actually develop it, but we're going to see how that actually plays out on a grander scale. So I obviously respect the governor's history of service, but I do we do have a lot of strong disagreements.
And Democratic State Senator Curtis Hurdle Jr. continued.
But I think on LGBT issues, education issues, and the expansion of charter schools, those are two, I think, pretty strong concerns that I think I and those in the Michigan State community would certainly disagree with the governor on.
So East Lansing Democrat Curtis Hurdle Jr. there wants to meet with Engler soon. State Senator Tanya Shoemaker of Lawton has also weighed in. She said, the Board of Trustees vote for John Engler to be MSU's interim president was a good one. She says he won't be the only former governor, of course, hired by MSU.
I understand that they're also looking at former Governor Blanchard in terms of being an acting director. I would assume by that you have two governors of two different political parties that really can focus in terms of bringing accountability for the victims in this awful situation.
Nevertheless, fellow Republican State Senator Tanya Shoemaker says Engler is the proper decision.
Seeking justice for the victims is priority one, and that includes investigating the massive breakdown which has allowed this monster to prey on our young women. And I think because of that, strong, fearless leadership is required to hold people accountable and necessary. And I think Governor Engler certainly knows and has the determination to get a results-oriented approach and to hold people accountable.
That's Senator Shoemaker right there. I've heard it suggested that the governor should just get to appoint the trustees for MSU. Now, that obviously is a good idea to you if your political party is currently in control. If it is not, you will not think it is a good idea. But these discussions about what to do about this MSU situation continue. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. And right now, let's check in with our second guest. It's St. Joseph High School Principal Greg Blomgren. The Michigan Attorney General's office has a tip line for high school kids, for students really, any students, to report suspicious activity that they see in their schools. It could just be something that they're concerned about that they think maybe the authorities ought to look into. They can also report things like as a friend expressing, say, a suicidal thought or something like that. It's the OK to Say tip line. They hold assemblies at high schools all over Michigan to keep kids informed about the existence of this anonymous tip line. They can even text message it, which is what the kids do these days. I caught up with St. Joe High School Principal Greg Blomgren to find out how it's been implemented around here. So let's hear that conversation now. All right, Principal Blomgren. So as a principal of St. Joe High, what have you heard from the Michigan Attorney General's office about the OK to Say tip line? Have they reached out to the school?
Yeah, I think initially when the program started, we had our St. Joseph Police Department liaison reach out to us. At the time, it was Lenny Rothrock, who's now retired from St. Joseph Police Department, and informed us that the state was putting together a program that might be beneficial for, you know, our students, our parents, our community, and just kind of the school environment in general for, you know, reporting activity that might be suspicious or concerning in an anonymous way. And so it was at that point we kind of kept our eye open and stayed in contact with Mr. Rothrock about the program, and we were able to get them to come in, I want to say in their initial year, and had a couple individuals from the state come in and introduce the program to us. Mm-hmm. And kind of talk with our parents as well as our students to initially get the ball rolling with the OK to Say tip line. And it's something that we've just had available for kids and make available to our student body and our parents ever since. So it's been a good program for us, and I think a way to just again, promote, you know, school safety and, you know, a place that kids and parents can feel safe and coming every single day, because we have, you know, resources such as the OK to Safe program.
All right. Now, I know we have an intern here at the radio station who I think is a recent St. Joe graduate. And she was telling me high schools have assemblies to teach kids about the OK to Safe tip line.
Yep, we still do. When we initially started the program, we did an assembly just for this program to make sure that everybody understood and knew what it was. But now, since we've been in with the OK to Safe program for a couple years and had it working for us, we still promote it in assemblies that we have for informational purpose, for other reasons like beginning of the year, startup school activities. We'll make sure that the kids know that it's still there, it's a resource for them, and it's available. And so, we do talk about that. We make sure they understand how to use it. There's ways that the students can use the OK to Safe tip line via social media, through actual phone calls. They can also email. So there's different ways in which the students can reach out to the tip line and share the information that they may have a concern with. So, yeah, we make sure that the students are aware of it, and we promote it, and we think it's a great program.
Have any kids actually used it?
Yes, they have. So my role initially in the OK to Safe program, I was the assistant principal here when OK to Safe started up. And so I would be the one who was, it's generally those phone calls come into the assistant principal, and they field those calls. It's usually a tip that comes in from the state, and then we act on the information that they provide to us. And I would say we don't get one weekly, I would say, not on average, but I'd say at least probably once every couple weeks, and sometimes weekly we will hear from OK to Say with some information that somebody has called in and reported that may have been a concern for them.
And I know the calls can be about all sorts of different things. Is there a typical sort of reason for one of these tips?
No, it's a wide range, you know, and they make it very clear with the program. You know, it's just one of those, it's an opportunity for you to feel safe and comfortable and anonymous if you see something that just doesn't seem right, to call in and, you know, share that information with someone so that it can be passed on to us here at the high school, the administration, so that we can look into to what it may be. I think if you look at the categories for OK to Say and what typically gets reported through their program, you know, they'll break it down on their site as, you know, bullying, cyberbullying is a common report that they may receive that they'll send out to schools. So we've seen that in the past. Other categories that they speak of and that we possibly throughout the, you know, our 3 years in experience and working with OK to Say, things such as drugs, you know, drug concerns, maybe suicidal threats that, you know, a kid has said something that may be concerning to another student. Mm-hmm. It could be something, you know, that is brought to our attention that happened in the parking lot or with a student outside of school, even that maybe it was something was witnessed or needed to be reported. So it's a wide range of things that we get from them, but I think it's a great service to have, just so that people feel comfortable. And, you know, not always will a kid feel comfortable and to come forward and report something to you face to face. So to have this as an anonymous way for students to share information, I think has made them feel more comfortable. And, you know, we've been able to act on the different tips that we've received from OK to Say. So it's been useful.
Wow. Now, you know, you just answered my next question, which was going to be, would you as a principal say it's been a good thing? It sounds like it has.
I absolutely think so. I mean, just anything that we can continue to do to promote, you know, the safety at school and to make our students feel comfortable and confident in coming here every day, knowing that they're in a good place, a safe place. And that's how we want every student to feel when they come to St. Joe High School. And I think this is, you know, one of those resources that gives, you know, not only the students that feeling, but also the parents and the community, that kids come here and they've got a great place to come every day and they can feel safe and confident being here.
Great. That was St. Joseph High School Principal Greg Blomgren talking with us about the OK to Say state tip line. I wanted to find out, how is it actually implemented locally? This is run by the Michigan Attorney General's Office. It is a way for kids to report things they might be concerned about in their schools, which could include suicidal friends, or it could include a fight they know that's about to happen, or something even worse. And, you know, they've been receiving thousands of tips to this thing. Ever since they launched it in 2015, they just announced they surpassed their 10,000th tip not too long ago. So I called around to some local high schools to ask them about how it works locally, and that's St. Joe High School principal Greg Blomgren. We appreciate his time on Our Take. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk with the Berrien County Health Department. Spokesperson Jillian Conrad will pop in here. She has some tips for one and all how to make sure that their babies sleep safely. If you would like to weigh in on something that we discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, the show where we have longer conversations about things that you may have heard about on WSJM News. We don't have to keep everything down to 30 seconds. We chat with the folks who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. So far in today's program, we talked with Congressman Fred Upton about protecting athletes from sexual assault. We also talked with the St. Joseph High School principal about how the OK to Say tip line works locally. And right now I thought we'd chat with the Berrien County Health Department. Spokesperson Jillian Conrad is here to talk with us about safe infant sleep. So let's see what Jillian has to tell us about making sure that your baby sleeps safely. All right, Jillian, so you want to talk about safe infant sleep. This is something that's been brought to the forefront recently by the release of some federal statistics. Is that right?
Yeah, so there was a recent CDC vital signs report about infant safe sleep and the importance of infant safe sleep. Some new statistics were just released on just the types of unsafe sleep conditions in which babies were found, unresponsive, some fatal instances. Recently, in addition to that, there is a new report out from the Michigan Department of Community Health about infant safe sleep, and it's just a good time to pick up that conversation again. It's something that the Berrien County Health Department is always trying to continue to educate our community on, ensure that new parents, that caregivers know the basics of infant safe sleep and can prevent those preventable deaths.
So not having a baby properly positioned or just not to putting a baby to sleep in the proper way can result in deaths. What are some of the mistakes that some parents make?
Sure. So when we're talking about unsafe sleep deaths, those are any deaths of an infant under the age of one where the sleep environment was likely to have contributed to the death. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times you might hear these called SIDS or sudden infant unexplained deaths. Possibly suffocation deaths. All of those could have unsafe sleep situations that have contributed to that death. So in the state of Michigan, sleep-related infant deaths are actually the leading cause of death amongst infants less than 1 year old. So it really is a top priority for us to make sure that we are addressing, you know, those common mistakes that people might be making, knowledge that they thought that they had from a previous time before some of the current recommendations were released. And this is all in an effort to reduce that infant mortality rate. You know, here in Berrien County, we do have a very high infant mortality rate in comparison with some of the other counties in Michigan and with the country. As far as sleep-related infant deaths go, in Berrien County, our rate is higher, much higher than the state of Michigan. So this is obviously something that remains top concern for us. So some of those common mistakes that new parents might make or that caregivers might be making is placing their child or the infant in one of those situations that is deemed unsafe. We know that the safest place for a baby to sleep is, it's pretty simple, you follow the ABCs, so alone, on their back, in a crib, and that crib should not have anything else in it other than a tight-fitting sheet. So no crib bumpers, no stuffed animals, no blankets. Babies don't need those sorts of things. They do have approved safe sleep sacks that you can put your baby in that will keep your baby warm without being something that is restrictive or could, you know, contribute to suffocation or go over their face or anything like that. So that can keep a baby warm if you're worried about, you know, keeping your baby warm during the winter nights here. But so alone on their back in a crib, those are the basics of safe sleep.
And there should not be anything in the crib. Well, when you say alone, that covers that. There shouldn't be any toys or anything like that in there?
No toys, no stuffed animals. Babies don't need that. And when we say alone, that means that they shouldn't be sleeping with a parent in an adult bed. They shouldn't be sleeping with other children, other babies, toddlers, other kids. And, you know, bed sharing is not recommended for safe sleep. What is recommended is room sharing. So the recommendation is that you share your room with your infant, and this can help prolong a breastfeeding relationship. You can stay close to your baby. Your baby can kind of smell you, the mother, the dad, and, you know that they're close to their parents, but in their own separate crib, in their own separate space, and not sharing that bed with the parent, because that is, you know, a lot of the time when we see suffocations happen, it's when they're in an adult bed with the parents, or potentially sleeping on a couch or on a chair, a mattress on the floor, just places that are not safe where adults can roll over. It's easy. I mean, I don't know about you, but I roll around in my sleep and I don't know about it. So it's just not safe to sleep next to your baby.
Oh, sure. I've fallen out of bed a few times. So you mentioned the numbers for Berrien County are high. Do you have statistics there?
I do, yes. So in the last 5 or 6 years or so, we've had over 25 sleep-related infant deaths, which when you think about those numbers, it doesn't seem like a lot. However, when you put it into perspective, you know, that's a whole kindergarten classroom full of Berrien County children that did not make it past their first birthday due to a very, preventable cause. And that's tragic. You know, any of these infant losses due to a preventable cause is truly a tragedy, and one that we want to continue to prevent. So our rate of sleep-related infant deaths in Berrien County is 2.2 deaths per 1,000 live births. To put that into some additional perspective, in the state of Michigan, that overall rate for sleep-related infant deaths is only 1.3 deaths per 1,000 live births. So we have a rate that is pretty much double what the state rate is, and that puts us at about the fifth worst county in Michigan. So it's not great, and you know, there's a lot more that we can be doing to educate our new parents, our caregivers, you know, grandparents, foster parents, anybody who might be caring for an infant. So just to talk about some of the things that the Berrien County Health Department has done over the years, with some assistance through the Raising Up Healthy Babies Task Force, which is a task force of Berrien County organizations and collaborators and community members who are interested in reducing the infant mortality rate. There's been some really wonderful work done over the last few years doing education. We've done some community baby showers. We've worked with babysitting classes over at Lakeland Health. We are really making an effort to make sure that all caregivers, foster parents, grandparents, anybody who might be caring for an infant, including all of those new parents, are educated about the proper way to sleep safely with their infant, or how to make sure that their infant is sleeping safely. Mm. So there has been a lot of really good work done, and we will continue to do that. And, you know, being a new parent is really, really hard. It is exhausting. You know, you're sleep deprived, and you're around the clock taking care of that infant. And it can be so tempting to, you know, bring your baby into bed with you, or put your baby, you know, on your chest and fall asleep on the couch, when that seems like the easiest thing to do in that moment. But it's just not a risk that you should be taking. It's not a risk that we want parents to take. And you know, there are a lot of products out on the market these days that make it kind of confusing for new parents. You know, there's different bouncer seats, there's rocking mechanisms, there's little bumper thingies that you can put in your bed with you. And a lot of these market themselves as being safe for infants to sleep in. And that's just not the case. The FDA has not approved most of these mechanisms, these little devices for babies to be sleeping in. And a lot of them have been linked to infant deaths and cases of infant deaths. You know, babies, the way that their heads are positioned when they're sleeping, kind of propped up, can be really dangerous. Their necks just don't have quite enough muscle to them to hold them, their airways clear. So it's very easy for a baby's head to slump to one side or the other and cause asphyxiation or suffocation. So we do recommend, you know, always on your back in a crib by yourself, those ABCs, and not to put your baby to sleep in any sort of other unapproved device like those rocking things or the bouncer seats or a car seat, things like that.
All right. Now, I remember when I was young in elementary school, they used to teach us about something called SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. They had us do a program with kids for SIDS. We solved math problems to somehow fight SIDS. So that sudden infant death syndrome, could that just have been, you know, babies not properly positioned?
That's, yeah, correct. So they have, you know, SIDS has been around for a lot of years. You hear that a lot. And that's just when a baby dies and there might not be an explanation to it. They have in recent years been able to link a lot of those deaths to accidental suffocation, a lot of them due to unsafe sleep situations. So whenever a baby dies in the state of Michigan, there are teams of professionals that do a follow-up investigation for that death. I mean, if there is any sort of criminal or malicious intent behind that, obviously that's another case. But a lot of times these deaths are accidental. And there is a follow-up investigation that's done by a fetal infant mortality review team. And so a lot of times through those case investigations, we do find, you know, there was an unsafe sleep situation happening in the home. You know, a lot of times the parents know what they should be doing, but it's that, you know, moment of, okay, I'll just get my baby to sleep right now and it should be fine. And that can just cause to be very tragic sometimes.
Okay, so just a quick reminder there, the ABCs of safe infant sleep, they are the baby should be alone,
yep,
on its back,
yes,
and in a crib.
Excellent. Good job, Andrew.
If anyone needs any more information, what should they do?
They can definitely visit us on our website. It's www.bchdmi.org. We've got some great information there, as well as links to both the CDC site and the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, where those two recent reports have just been released. So if anybody's interested in joining the Raising Up Healthy Babies Infant Mortality Reduction Task Force, give us a call, and we'd be happy to hook you up with that and answer any other questions that new parents, caregivers, grandparents, anybody taking care of an infant might have.
All right. That was Berrien County Health Department spokesperson Jillian Conrad talking with us about how to make sure your baby is safe when you put it down to sleep at night, a very important topic the health department tries to educate the community about on a regular basis. I appreciate Jillian's time. And you know why I especially appreciate Jillian's time? Because she always comes in here in person to talk. And that's nice. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for today's edition of Our Take. I've been the host today. My name is Andrew Green. I should be back tomorrow, same time, same station. Tomorrow we'll talk with the National Federation of Independent Business about recent tax reforms at the state level. And we'll also talk with the U.S. Coast Guard about ice safety in the winter. They have a message for you. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. And you have a fantastic rest of your day.